You are listening to the Battle Born Libertarian Podcast, the official podcast of the Libertarian Party of Nevada. Here's your host, Tyus France.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to the Battle Born Libertarian Podcast. I'm your host, Tyus France. And on our last episode, we had Sam do an interview. And on this one, well, the truth is Sam is just going from candidate to candidate. We've got so many great people running under the Libertarian ticket that Sam has gotten them on the phone and recorded those calls, and we wanted to get them out to you as quickly as possible. So rather than have me rambling on and on, I'm just going to turn this right over to Sam to do his interview with Greg Luckner. And next week we've got, well, for the next 3 weeks, this week and two more weeks, at least for now, we've got interviews with different candidates. We're going to get their viewpoint, so it should be really cool. Without further ado, here's Sam.
Hey, welcome everybody. This is Sam Toll, welcoming you to the Battle Born Libertarian Podcast. I'm joined today with Greg Luckner. Greg is running for Congressional District 4, and I'd like you to learn a little bit about Greg, what he's got going on. Greg, how are you today?
Great, thanks. Thanks for having me.
No, it's great to be here with you. So you're running in Congressional District 4. Whereabouts exactly is that from a geography standpoint?
It's pretty much from the kind of the northern part of Clark County all the way up to like the middle of the state below like the Reno-Carson City area. So pretty much the middle of the state down.
Wow. So you're all the way up, as include Minden and Gardnerville?
And then Gardnerville. And yeah, I think so.
And Carson City, has it come up that far north?
No, it's not up to Carson City. It's below that area.
Okay, so does include Douglas County, which is where Minden and Gardnerville are. Nevada's got a ton of real estate, and obviously down in Vegas there's a bunch of small little districts, and then up here in the north part of the state in the rurals we got big huge gigantic divisions where there's lots of land but very few people.
The district basically is like Mineral County, Nye County, White Pine, and everything below that sort of.
Gotcha. So lots of acres, not a lot of people until you get closer to Vegas.
And probably 90% of the population's in the northern part of Clark County and Pahrump and Mesquite.
Right. So you're obviously running as a Libertarian. You're running against a Democrat and a Republican, I'm guessing.
Yes.
What is it that brought you to the Libertarian Party? What is it about the message of freedom that inspired you and made you run for office?
Well, honestly, I've been a Libertarian politically, my entire life, with a small L Libertarian. I've always kind of believed in smaller government, and mostly the government's job is protecting individual freedoms. And I've always felt that, free market kind of benefits everybody a lot better than kind of crony capitalism or socialism or any of those things. But I would say, I tried the Ron Paul approach where, using one of the two major parties to try and, get libertarian ideas across or libertarian-ish candidates across. And, not only did that not work, but I've noticed in the last 2 to 3 years when I've gotten more involved with the Libertarian Party, it's been because the two major parties have, especially the Republican Party, has kind of gone the opposite direction from the libertarian people in it. So I found that realistically there is a very, very large divide between libertarians and Republicans and Democrats, even though people, always try and throw us in one batch or the other.
Well, it's interesting. The Libertarian Party of Nevada has on our website a graphic that shows, where we align ourselves with the folks in the Democratic Party, where we align ourselves with the folks in the Republican Party, and then where we're not aligned with them. And it's really interesting. I like to say, we're to the left of the left in some areas, and we're to the right of the right in some areas. But for the most part, we are right down the middle of the fairway with most people. And it's interesting. You know, I'm a reformed liberal, and I came to the Libertarian Party after voting for Barack Obama the first go-round, and then watching, you know, everything that he promised on the campaign trail turn out to be, you know, just a pure fabrication.
But I think the whole right-left paradigm is wrong in terms of, you know, being right of something, left of something, because the two-party system right now, they have their platforms, which have a mishmash of right and left on either one. They're just, I say they're, you know, it's more right or wrong, and I'd say both of the platforms have mostly wrong things on them, and they, being that it's so, you know, us versus them right now, there's not a lot of Democrats that are espousing, you know, good ideas just because they're good, or Republicans doing the same thing. They're just espousing the ideas that they think their side, you know, should support on their platform. And it's just hard to say that one is left and one is right of anything.
You know, that's an interesting observation. There's a guy named Robin Kroner. Oh boy, he's going to be mad at me when I mispronounce his last name. Who I interviewed, we're going to have here on a show on the Libertarian Podcast upcoming at some point. But basically, his argument is that you're either for, you know, it's not left or right, as you just said. It's either you're for individual liberties or you're for the government telling you what to do, or, you know, having the authorities just make decisions for you. And, you know, there's, as you just pointed out, there's very little difference between the Democrats and the Republicans when it comes down to how they behave, how they function, and how they operate.
Right. That's my issue, is that the Democrats want the government to control you in certain ways, and the Republicans want the government to control you in other ways. But neither one of them is left or right. It's just different things that they want the government to force on you. You know, we're not left of Democrats or left of Republicans, right? We're like completely individualist, basically. So it's hard to explain to somebody because they're so used to the dichotomy of the specific left and right and Republican and Democrat. It's hard to explain that both parties are really the same in a lot of ways.
No, it really is true. Every 4 years, they trot out these you know, issues that are designed to get their base all you know, frothy, and, you know, whether it's gun control or abortion or you know, whatever. I mean, there's a number of different issues that they use to get everybody all juicy about, and then when they get reelected, because 90% of them do, they put those in their pocket, put them back on the shelf, and go back to D.C. or to Carson City, and it's business as usual. It's how do we make money? How do we, you know,
Well, and they have to figure out how they can shove those issues into a Republican or a Democrat platform, you know, just because that's what they have to do to you know, to win elections, basically. They, you know, I just read some article that basically said the Republicans need the Democrats and the Democrats need the Republicans, because if they didn't have a boogeyman to run against, you know, they would never get anyone to go out and vote for them. It's basically the dichotomy is what keeps them in power.
And they both fight us and other third parties to hang on to that stranglehold, because they know that if there was a choice between, I like to say, you know, you can choose to eat Cheerios or Honey Nut Cheerios every day for the rest of your life, but the Libertarians, you know, allow you to choose whatever you want. If that's pizza and ice cream, you can eat that too for breakfast. But it sounds like then that you've pretty much been a small L Libertarian from out of the gate since you became politically aware.
Yeah, and like I said, I've always been, you know, I've obviously when I was younger, I was told the same things that everyone else, and I kind of had to buy into the whole, you know, Republican, Democrat, you know, this and that. But I also think that looking back, there were Republicans and Democrats that were more libertarian oriented, and the platforms, the dichotomy wasn't so stark between the two sides before. I mean, if you look into the 80s and 90s, there were plenty of people that were not specifically libertarian or Democrat or Republican that were running on a lower, on a less government, more freedom sort of ideas. They were just pushing good ideas, basically. I don't even know that it's less government as much as what's the most efficient way to help people.
No, that's a really good point. And again, you know, we've become so polarized and so divided that it's really disappointing. And that's really, you know, I think one of the reasons that, as I look around for people under 40, they're disenchanted with the situation. They are no party preference because they recognize that neither party represents what they believe in, and neither party is really interested in getting anything done for us. They're just, you know, interested.
Yeah, I would say that the one of the biggest problems that the Libertarian Party has is just that, you know, if I go and say I'm running as a libertarian, you know, 99% of the people that I talk to will go, oh, okay, what's a libertarian? I mean, we just don't have the, you know, because of the 100 years or, you know, 100+ years of Republicans and Democrats, we don't have any name recognition, really. People don't know what a libertarian means or even what third parties mean in general. They understand nonpartisan, but they generally seem to think, okay, I'm nonpartisan, meaning I lean Republican or Democrat, but I don't really want to associate myself with them.
Right, right. So let's talk a little bit, Greg, about why it is that you're running. What is it that's driving you to want to represent your district in the state of Nevada?
Well, first of all, I tell everybody the same thing. I wholeheartedly believe that CD4, which is the district I'm running in Nevada, is the most libertarian district in the United States. I mean, we generally were the Wild West for most period of time, even though, you know, there's obviously some liberalization of Clark County and the bigger areas. But, I mean, we still have legalized marijuana, legalized prostitution, legalized gambling, and, you know, and those are state things, basically. But, you know, specifically in this district, it's pretty clear that people want to be free to do whatever they want to do.
So what's the perspective on, let's say, for example, you know, BLM and land management? When you talk about libertarian ideals and you talk about the district you represent, that's what one of the things that jumps out in my mind.
Yeah, I think the one of the interesting issues about the district is that there's so much land that is BLM land, but it's a lot of it is because we have also have a lot of military bases. We have Area 51, believe it or not. We have a lot of very secretive areas, and we have a lot of nuclear testing ground areas where, you know, people may not want to live there for a long time. So, being that there's a lot of BLM area is not something that's very libertarian. I mean, we generally don't want the government to control any more land than they absolutely have to, but in a lot of areas, they kind of have to. So, you know, it's not a big issue, but when it comes to, like, you know, Bundy-type situations, obviously we're, you know, usually for the little guy and not for the government or the BLM.
Right, I do. It's interesting. It didn't dawn on me, but obviously, yes. You've got Area 51 down there, and they clearly have a big chunk of southern Nevada under their purview. But you bring up the Bundys and what they, you know, sort of represent, and their situation's a little unique. But basically, it's like, hey, you know, Nevada. Well, there's nobody in the Beltway, no one in Washington, D.C., that I think is more capable than someone here in Nevada for making decisions that directly affect Nevadans. I get into conversations with folks, even my dad, about how that is, you know, a statement that I stand behind. And it's interesting to get other people's perspectives. It's like, oh, no, the you know, federal government is much more capable of deciding what's smart and good for Nevada, and I shake my head.
Well, and And in, like I said, in certain areas, like military bases and, you know, nuclear areas, things like that, then yes, maybe the federal government should be the ones, you know, in charge of those areas. But there's a lot of land, you know, ranches and things like that, that, yeah, if I was in Congress, I'd be like, okay, let's push to get rid of or at least hand back as much of this land to the states as we can and let the states decide how to handle these kind of things.
Right. Again, smaller government. Makes sense to me. What are some of the other issues that affect your district that, that you're sort of attuned to and speaking to as you're on the campaign trail?
Well, one of the issues I'm promoting is defending and championing military, active military and veterans issues, because we do have so many military bases in this district and we do have so many ex-military, you know, contractors and other people that move out here. Just FYI, I'm a real estate agent. I've been out here for 14 years selling real estate. So I do a lot of, you know, relocations of different military people, either, you know, they're veterans or they're active military that are moving out here and buying houses or renting houses. And so I get a lot of their issues and I get a lot of, you know, information from them. And basically, yeah, they have the VA, and we have some good VA hospitals in certain areas, but, you know, there's a lot of rural areas. There's a lot of problems with that, healthcare in general for people, but especially for military veterans. You know, we had to fight to make marijuana legal, which is helping a lot of the PTSD issues. But they have, you know, they have many issues, including just, you know, helping them out with starting businesses and things like that, that the government really, I think it owes them, even though I'm not a big government person. I think, you know, if somebody did serve in the military and was promised X, Y, Z, they should, you know, the government has to keep their promises.
You know, it's really interesting that you bring that up. My kid brother's a major in the United States Army, and one of the things that strikes me in talking to him and his experience is the, you know, the mental health issues. There's obviously the physical issues for the young men and women who were injured, you know, whether it's in Afghanistan,
right,
or anywhere, really, but in those two theaters primarily, who really have, in my mind, not been given the you know, haven't been stood beside or behind in terms of what the government is obligated to do, the feds are obligated to do. The other thing, though, that is really just brutally heartbreaking is, you know, we lose 23 of those young men and women every day to suicide. And as you
said, we need to have much better. I mean, the healthcare, people think of healthcare, they think of, you know, like you said, people who are injured in the war or whatever, or have, you know, or older military or older veterans. But there's so many mental issues, so much in the way of PTSD and suicides and things like that, that really that almost has to be a whole other, you know, issue that we take on. And that's, and I think sending people less to war in general, having less wars, going overseas less, intervening less, is a good start to stopping that in the future. But for now, we have to take care of the people who we sent over there and put them in harm's way, and they have mental issues. We have to make sure that those people have the help and support that they need.
Yeah, those young men and women stood for us, and whether we, you or I, or anyone else agrees with why they were there, is immaterial. The reality is they stood for us. They took, you know, whether it's mental or physical anguish and pain, and we owe it to them to stand by them. And it's just, it's unconscionable to see the way that the federal government has behaved or misbehaved regarding
themselves. Yeah, and when you say, you know, I'm a libertarian, and people assume, well, you just want to, you know, you're an anarchist, you just want to get rid of government, you don't want to, you know, pay for a VA or healthcare or whatever. It's like, no, I believe the government should do what it's supposed to do. And if it makes promises and it puts people in harm's way, then it should have to take care of those people. But there's a lot of things that we can cut that have nothing to do with that, that we could definitely have the money to take care of those people.
there's no question. It's, you know, government is about priorities. You take our money, you decide how to spend it based upon the priorities that are established from the leadership. And it's clear that, you know, we have tons of weapon systems that we need to develop. There's, you know, the astonishing amount of money spent just on the F-35 could take care of these young men and women for their lives and do the right thing for them when they did the right thing for us.
There are programs you hear about all day, you know, tank programs, plane programs, where they know they don't even work. They're spending billions, trillions of dollars on building these things as a boondoggle. And then they say, you know, oh, we can't spend an extra, you know, $1 billion on mental health issues for veterans. It's like you said, you get rid of any one of those things, probably, you know, even cut back on unnecessary things, and you have plenty of money for those things. It's all priorities.
And it's very frustrating because in many cases, you know, unless a person does what you're doing, which is standing up, running for office, and then putting yourself in a position to make a difference, as an individual, as just, you know, people walking down the street, it's frustrating for us because there's not much we can do. And the folks in power just don't listen, or they say they're going to listen, but once we elect them, they, you know, become infected with the system. Let's talk a little bit about other things that you might have on your platform that you'd like to share with our Battleborn Libertarian podcast audience.
Well, I think, you know, my number one issue, and, you know, I hate to be standard libertarian, but my number one issue is the war on drugs. Because I've thought about it. People ask, well, what's your, you know, what if you could change one thing, you know, if you could change one policy or do one thing, you know, what would it be, you know? And I'd mentioned other things before, and then I thought about it, and I was like, you know, if we ended the war on drugs, we would really, all those other issues would be solved to some extent, because, you know, the war on drugs has produced a lot of the problems that we have with criminal justice, which is a big issue for me. It's produced a lot of problems with the healthcare industry, which is a big issue for me. It's produced a lot of problems with the budgeting, you know, and police control and all that kind of stuff. Basically, almost anything that you can point to that is an issue that people have been arguing about for, you know, however long, is something you could either solve or would be mostly solved by ending the war on drugs.
You know, I am that libertarian. I couldn't agree with you more. I talk to people all the time about it, and as you just said, criminal justice system. Hey, there's fewer people in jail. There's fewer police officers wasting their time with kids smoking weed, and actually now able to lock up serious criminals, violent offenders. The police would have time to go after the real bad guys. One of the things that you didn't mention that I always like to throw out there is, hey, you know, libertarians are, for the most part, we're fairly open border kind of folks. I don't know where you stand on that personally, and it doesn't matter where I stand, but in terms of the war on drugs, if you shut down the war on drugs tomorrow, the Sinaloa cartel and all the other cartels in Mexico go out of business. The relationship that they have with the government goes out of business. And all of a sudden, the people who are getting murdered left and right don't. And people who leave Mexico may not want to.
Yeah, I was going to say another big issue that would be solved, or at least, again, mitigated by a large chunk, is the immigration issue, because we created the problem in Mexico. We created the drug cartels with our war on drugs. If we just suddenly made all drugs legal, basically, and there was competition legally and everything else, the drug cartels in Mexico would have no power anymore. They'd have no money. And we wouldn't have to worry about the, you know, building a wall and, you know, bad guys coming through and drug cartels and, you know, I mean, even if you go on a cruise nowadays or, you know, go to Mexico as a tourist, you're told, oh, you know, you can't go into this area. The drug cartels are there and, you know, this is dangerous or whatever. That's all part and parcel with the war on drugs that we started.
Right, and they collude with the Mexican government in many cases and create this aura of corruption and danger that, as you said, would not exist if all drugs were legal. It's really hard for people to wrap their head around that. I talk to kids
even in Colombia and other South American countries, even in the Middle East, if we stopped the war on drugs, they would have so much less money and power, and the terrorists and the drug cartels would basically almost disappear, or if not disappear, have a really hard time keeping power.
Yeah, no, they'd have a serious hitch put in their giddy-up because their funding stream, their revenue stream would go away. And that, of course, would free up the free market for smaller industry folks to produce quality cannabis and other things. And, you know, you talk about hard drugs like meth and heroin. Clearly those drugs have societal problems and health issues, but you change that from a law enforcement solution to the health problem and then turn it into a health solution to the health problem. You get
right. You do what Portugal did, which if you look into it, everything's working pretty well there, and you take it from a criminal issue, you decriminalize it, and you make it a healthcare issue, basically. You say, okay, we're concerned that people are using heroin, but we don't want to have, police resources and be trying to get heroin dealers and all that kind of stuff. What we want to do is try and get people off of heroin.
Right. Right. So we give them free needles. We do intervention at the point where they're doing their drugs and can mitigate much of the problem, in the
streets. Always going to be people who are addicted to something, and if we outlaw heroin and we got rid of it completely, they'd find meth or something else. I mean, there's always going to be people who are going to just, that's it. They're going to get to that point. The best way to stop them from really, ruining their lives is to treat them as if they have an issue, like a health issue, instead of trying to literally sick the government on everyone that's trying to sell them something that they want.
And locking them up in cages
and locking them up for using what they want because they're addicted.
Right.
I mean, on either side, it's a ridiculous way of dealing with things that doesn't actually have any effect other than causing all the problems that we have today.
And there's a lot of people with a vested interest in keeping it going. And on one side it's the cartels, on the other it's folks like the DEA and the FBI and local law enforcement who make tons of money. I know in Vegas, we have talked about the asset forfeiture issue and how people in the neighborhoods are having quarters and their change confiscated and seized with the asset forfeiture issues to further the law enforcement's budget. There's an incentive for them to legally steal, and it's thanks to the drug war and
it's the same thing that happened with anything else with prohibition. That's when the FBI rose to power basically and got all the resources and everything. The IRS basically became powerful under that. I mean, government agencies, when they're tasked with stopping somebody from doing something that they're going to do anyway, it incentivizes the illegal community because they're going to make a lot of money, and then incentivize the government agencies that, are supposedly going to stop that. It doesn't help anyone. It just empowers those two sides, basically.
And it's really, frustrating and disappointing to see good people, who believe in law and order, who believe in law enforcement, who support, the folks who wear the uniform and the badge, and they don't recognize that those people do deserve that respect, but what they're doing in the terms of the drug war to families, to people, taking the pipeline from school to prison, it is not doing anyone any good. And when they do those kinds of arrests, they hurt everybody. They hurt the entire society.
Well, and this is also, it would bring me back to, and I hate to sound like I'm blaming them, but I am, because it comes back to the two-party system nowadays. Both parties are using the war on drugs whenever they can you know, whether it's, you know, oh, we're a country of laws and, you know, we got to do this and that, or, oh, you know, you got to protect minorities and people because, you know, they have this problem or whatever. They're both basically trying to use the war on drugs, you know, to scare people basically so that they vote for them. And, the information that goes out is just scare tactics. It's not actual real information about anything. Nobody's putting out information. None of the Democrats or Republicans are putting out information about Portugal or other countries that, you know, have decriminalized all the drugs. None of them are coming out with, you know, how much money we would save if we didn't go after people, if we didn't have to spend money on the police and the DEA and all that kind of stuff. None of these people are going to do that because they want the power to themselves and they want to scare people into voting for them.
Right. And it keeps many of their donors in the chips. You know, many of the people who contribute to their reelection campaigns are those people who want to perpetuate this because, hey, it's good business. You know, it really is frustrating. And, you know, let's face it, if this was something that had produced even middling success, even you know, steps in the right direction, then there might be an argument that we should proceed, or, you know, tweak it a little bit, or you know, adjust things to.
Yeah, you could say a war on drugs is a failure because, and then almost every year you could mention something, you know, whether it's the rise of meth or, you know, the drug cartels in Mexico or whatever, you know, poppy fields in Afghanistan, whatever the case is. You could say, this is one more reason why the war on drugs is a failure. If you went the other way and you said, these are ways that the war on drugs was a success, I honestly can't really think of many.
No, and I've offered my friends who are law and order types to say, hey, listen, where is this working anywhere? What part of this program is bearing fruit? And I have an open mind, and I'd love to learn, you know, what it is that you see that's working. And there's zero response. It's like, hey, we just have all these problems, and so this is the only way we can think of to solve them.
And I wrote a post, you know, recently about, you know, people who say this is a country of laws. Lately, that's been a, you know, expression, especially on the Republican side. You know, oh, we're a country of laws, you know, and okay, that's great. But, you know, we have a lot of bad laws, too. And people on both sides like to point out how bad the laws are when it's against them. But then, side, they're all like, oh, no, laws are great. We're a country of laws. We need to be a country of laws.
Yeah, the law and order folks, you know, I mean, let's face it. People think that libertarians are anarchists and, you know, the anarchy gets a bad rap. You know, it doesn't say no rules. It says no rulers. Now, libertarians certainly aren't, you know, well, I shouldn't say libertarians. Folks in the Libertarian Party, you know, don't take those extreme views. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, there are gazillions, let's say, of bad laws on the books or laws that aren't pertinent or relevant in today's society. You know, I often tell folks, hey, listen, if you're going to pass a law that you feel is very important to put on the books, you got to take two off the books because, you know, there's just,
yeah, but even if like I said, the amount of bad laws is almost besides the point. The point is, even if you had one bad law and all the other laws were great, you can't say that you should just, you know, go by every law and you should be a law-abiding citizen and that's the only thing that matters. Because if that one law is really bad, you know, it could be disastrous for people. I mean, the slavery was legal. I mean, a lot of things were legal in this country for a long time that we consider horrible, you know, horrible offenses today. You know, you just can't say we're a country of laws and therefore, you know, every law is great.
So let's circle back around to your campaign and what it means, you know, to the folks in your district to consider you as a viable candidate, which you obviously are. You're very articulate and you've thought about the issues. How can folks?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. Go on.
Well, I was gonna ask, how can folks learn more about what it is that you've got going on, your website and some of your social media stuff?
So yeah, my website's easy, Luckner. That's my last name, LUCKNER. LucknerForCongress.com, FOR, not a four. LucknerForCongress.com, and same thing with Facebook. Facebook.com/LucknerForCongress. It's easy to find me on both of those. And I believe on Twitter it's Luckner4, FORNVCD4, the number 4.
Gotcha.
So that's on Twitter. It's Luckner4NVCD4. And yeah, and basically, you know, I post occasionally on Facebook and my website. People can go to volunteer or donate or just get some more information about my platform. I will be, you know, attending different events throughout the district, and you'll see my signs. Yeah, that's I'm trying to hopefully do door to door also somewhere in the, you know, I'm in Clark County, so in that area. Yeah, if anyone needs anything, any other information, they can always email me too at Greg, G-R-E-G-G is my name, at LucknerForCongress.com.
Yeah, I encourage people to reach out to Greg if they have any questions about, you know, the specifics of issues that affect the district. Obviously, he's, you know, interested in representing the people and not the government or the status quo. And I think that's something that is extremely important to folks who live, you know, not at the 30,000-foot level, but at the kitchen table.
And it's an interesting district because I wanted to bring up that the district has only been around for 6 years. So every 2 years is a new seat, is a new congressman or a new election, and we've had three different people in that seat, so one every time. And the first two of them, the Democrat Stephen Horsford and the Republican Crescent Hardy, are the two that I'm running against, the Republican and Democrat that I'm running against. So both of them have actually held that seat before and obviously not done very well because they've both been beaten for that seat. The current person holding that seat now is not running again, and he's a Democrat. So I feel like, you know, this is one of those situations of the definition of insanity, is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. This is literally the case in this situation.
Right, yeah. So you've got a choice between Cheerios or Honey Nut Cheerios, and, you know...
And you've tasted both of them and spit them out and said, we don't like these.
That's right. Well, good. Greg, I'm very excited to have been able to talk to you today. It sounds like you know, you've got some passion. You care strongly about issues that affect people where they live and not, you know, out there in theory land or fantasy land, and that's very encouraging.
And I want people to look into the Libertarian Party in general, and I want people to, you know, realize that we're more about solutions than just, you know, less government. We actually want to help people through using less government and more outside the box solutions.
No, very good. I couldn't say it better myself. It's, you know, it's not like we're anarchists. We're Americans. We believe in with this country, and we believe in making a difference and taking care of our neighbors and being good people. And you know, that's part of our message. And I agree with you 100%.
Well, I hope everyone else finds out more about us and votes for me when they can.
Super. Well, Greg, again, wish you the very best. I'm looking forward to pushing more content so that folks can learn more about you. And I'm going to have you on again on the Battleborn Libertarian podcast as we get closer to the election.
Okay. Sounds good.
Great. Greg, thanks again for coming on today.
Okay. Thank you.
This show is brought to you by the Libertarian Party of Nevada. Music is provided by T. Sims. Please support the show by subscribing, sharing it with friends, and leaving a positive review on iTunes. For more information or to learn how to get involved, visit lpnevada.org. Thank you for listening.